WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin, and we have one fun-filled hour in store for each and every one of you out there listening right now. In just a moment, later on in our show, actually, we'll be chatting with Tom Anastas, who is the head coach of the Michigan State University hockey team. Of course, Michigan State, they get their season underway this weekend on the road. Tom will talk about what the start of a new year feels like. He'll also chat about the renovations at Munice Arena, just to get everyone out there pumped about the new year, new season for Spartan hockey. That should be a great conversation. We'll also recap the Detroit Pistons and their first exhibition game last night against the Indiana Pacers. And I tell you what, that young stud, that rookie showed out. We'll talk about who that rookie is in just a sec. Also, the MLB postseason is underway. The Houston Astros, they get a big W over the New York Yankees to move on. Wild card baseball, gotta love it, folks. I love those one-game elimination wild card games. They're so fun. And we'll also chat about fantasy football. DraftKings and FanDuel, right now they're on the hot seat, folks. We'll give you the details of that and so much more. If you want to call in and be a part of today's show, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this Wednesday, October 7th. Led by junior Sam Weatherhead, the Michigan State men's golf team captured the Fossum Memorial title at Story Point O Woods Golf Course and Country Club in Benton Harbor, Michigan. Now, the Spartans won with a school record 54-hole score of 31 under 833. Impressive stuff. The second round, 275, was the third lowest round in school history, behind the 273 that the 2002 team carded, led by head coach Casey LeBlanc. Now, the 2007 Spartans were the second with a 274. Cincinnati finished second with a 12 under 852. The Michigan State B team was third with a 22 over 294, while Nebraska was fourth with a 33 over 897. Detroit Lions coach Jim Caldwell said Tuesday he is instructing his players not to talk with the media about the batted ball controversy that happened at the end of Monday night's loss to Seattle, because he wants his team to remain focused on Sunday's game against Arizona. Caldwell declined to answer most other questions about the batted ball controversy, although he said it is not something the Lions work on much, especially in the end zone. When asked about whether a lot of players are really know the rule, Caldwell said, quote, "There's obviously officials that don't know the rule as well." Very well said, Jim. Well, St. Louis has naming rights for its football team's new stadium, except the city may soon have neither a football team nor a new stadium. National Car Rental has pledged $158 million over 20 years for the naming rights to a proposed Riverfront Stadium project just north of downtown St. Louis. The rental car company is owned by Enterprise Holdings, headquartered in the city. However, the talks are in works to possibly move the St. Louis Rams to Los Angeles, California. The Detroit Pistons opened their preseason with a 115-112 loss to the Indiana Pacers. They were certainly glimpses of brilliance, particularly from its potential stars, Andre Drummond, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and yes, rookie Stanley Johnson. Those three combined for 64 points on 22 of 36 shooting, and they did it without their $80 million point guard, Reggie Jackson, who sat out with a sore Achilles. Johnson looked great, though, leading the way for the team with 26 points. Houston Rockets shooting guard James Harden thinks he should have won the 2015 MVP award over Golden State Warriors point guard Steph Curry. Quote, "I am the best player in the league. I believe that. I thought I was last year too." Harden finished second in MVP voting behind Curry after leading the Rockets to a first-place finish in the Southwest Division for the first time since the 93-94 year when they won the NBA Finals. In the 2015 postseason, the Rockets were knocked out of the Western Conference Finals by Curry and the Warriors, who went on to win it all. Still, Harden thinks he deserved the distinction of the league's most valuable player. The Houston Astros advanced to the American League Division Series with a 3-0 victory over the New York Yankees on Tuesday night in the AL wild card game at Yankee Stadium. With the victory, the Astros move on to face the Kansas City Royals in the best of five ALDS, which begins on Thursday night in Kansas City. The Yanks' first postseason appearance in 3 years was brief, due in large part to Dallas Keuchel, who limited them to 3 hits in a 7-strikeout performance, pitching on 3 days of rest for the first time in his pro career. Mets ace Matt Harvey missed a mandatory team workout Tuesday at Citi Field. Harvey later apologized to teammates for the unexcused absence, which apparently happened because he lost track of time. And two of the biggest daily fantasy sites, DraftKings and FanDuel, responded Wednesday morning to calls asking for greater transparency. FanDuel announced in a statement that it had permanently banned its employees from playing on other fantasy sites. A day after the two sites temporarily imposed that ban, both companies had always banned employees from playing on their own sites. The controversy arises after a DraftKings employee finished second in a contest on the rival site FanDuel due to a data leak. Interesting stuff, folks. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and voice your thoughts on anything, call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's start the show.
I know you always talk about not worrying about all the noise outside the program, but when the perception of what your team is so fluid week to week, and you have a lot of guys that are in the spotlight for the first time, what do you and your staff say to them so that they don't worry?
Well, I say the same thing as when you all buried us last week, and all that, that it really doesn't matter what you think. It really doesn't matter what you say. And I'm hoping that nobody on our team is playing for you. I hope they're playing for each other and their team and what they want to accomplish and not what you think. Because that's not certainly what I'm doing. I'm coaching and working for our players and our team to be as good as it can be. And if that's not pleasing to somebody else, it's not pleasing to somebody else. I said before, I believe in our team. I do believe in our team. And we're going to work hard to make our team better. And I hope the players respond the right way. And it's not going to be for you. The fans, yes. Because if it was up to you, we're 6 foot under already. We're dead and buried and gone. Gone.
Last one with Alex.
So if that was the case, I mean, we'd have to get some respirators out or something down there. I had to put life back in people.
Last one with Alex.
It's hard to
find. Better make it a good one now, because I'm about half fired up here.
I know you don't like to do comparisons, but...
No, I don't. So don't ask me a comparison question.
I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is how we start today's edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome to the show. I am the happy Al Martin on this Wednesday, October 7th, 2015. Folks, that was the voice of Nick Saban, former Michigan State head football coach, of course, now with Alabama. We all know about the storied success that Nick has had with the Alabama Crimson Tide, but I tell you what, after that team lost to Ole Miss not too long ago on September 19th during the third game of the season, if you guys remember that 43-37 loss, you heard a lot of people across the nation sort of bashing. Well, I don't want to use the word bashing, but really looking at the Alabama Crimson Tide with sort of a side eye, questioning whether this team could get back to a college football playoff and questioning whether or not Nick Saban could lead this team to even in those sort of talks. You know, and again, we overreact in sports. I always talk about that every single week, every single day. I feel like I'm here on the airwaves. And it was so glaring, though, because when Alabama lost to Ole Miss, that's the immense chatter that you heard. Alabama doesn't have it anymore. Since that loss, they've gone on to beat Louisiana Monroe 34-0. That was kind of expected, Louisiana Monroe. Eh? But I tell you what, I really wasn't expecting the dominance that they had over the Georgia Bulldogs this past weekend, a 38-10 victory there. So Nick was feeling pretty good, and as you just heard in that snippet, and this snippet has gone viral, folks, I heard about it, I want to say yesterday afternoon, and I heard everyone talking about it, and I'm like, I gotta sit down and listen to this. So I went home last night, and as I was winding down, I was like, let me check out what Nick had to say and why everyone's, up in the air talking about this snippet. And you see why, right? That's hilarious stuff. Isaac, I think we may have to take that some chunks of that snippet and do them as random roll-ins throughout the coming weeks here on the show, because was that not great or what? Had you heard that snippet before just now?
No, I was just saying I had not. I can't believe it, because, I'm not the biggest Nick Saban fan, because coming from an LSU family, you're taught to really hate Saban. So it was such a pleasant surprise when I got up to Michigan State. I'm like, wait, y'all hate Saban too? It was great. It was like
that's
a
why
family,
you came here, right?
A community.
Yeah, that's why you decided to come here, right, and become a Spartan, huh?
Exactly. So, no, but anyway, I'm surprised I hadn't heard that. But that's one of the better rants in recent sports history.
Oh, it's great. And I get where Saban's coming from, because, folks, I mean, we live in a sporting society where it's all about what have you done for me lately. I always bring up that. Is it like the Janet Jackson song? What have you done for me lately? And if you haven't won lately, or if your team looks on the rocks, you know how fickle fan bases can be. I mean, they can love you 1 week and hate you the next week. They can love you 1 year and hate you the next year, folks. And I just think that Ole Miss loss was so big that, I mean, and you heard it nationally, folks. I mean, people just started chiming in. You know how fans can be on social media and Twitter. I mean, Alabama doesn't have it anymore. What is Saban doing? Blah, 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 blah. And you think, and hey, you hear from coaches all the time. We try to shield our players from that. I don't go on social media. You hear a lot of coaches say that. I don't go on social media. I don't pay attention to the noise. But you better believe, after a while, that noise starts to get in your ear. You start to hear some of it. And you can pretty much fathom what folks out there, what respective fan bases out there are saying about you and your program. And it can be pretty annoying. Pretty annoying, folks, especially when evaluating the incredible track record that Nick Saban has. I mean, again, you can love him, you can hate him. Again, there are a lot of Spartan fans out there, as you just stated, Isaac, that dislike Nick Saban due to how he left here at Michigan State and, also LSU. So I get it. But at the same time, it's pretty hard to argue with the resume that he has as the head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide. He's won, folks. He's won national championships. But at the end of the day, again, if you don't consistently keep that up, criticism comes at you from different directions. So I agree with Nick. I have to be honest. When I heard that bite and I heard Nick going completely off, folks, he called out, the one media member who asked him that question and said, hey, man, we try to shield our guys from that noise. And just, not too long ago, you guys had us buried, as he said, 6 feet under. And it can be annoying to a degree. So I just think that was a boiling point. That question was, that was like the last draw for Nick before he just went off. He certainly did. But I don't know about you, Isaac, man, but every time I see Nick, even when he does, not even in that moment right there, but just a generic interview, Nick seems like he doesn't want to, he doesn't seem like a very inviting guy. It seems like he's always angry. He's always uptight. He's not a real inviting personality. I don't know, and I'm pretty sure a lot of you guys get that vibe. Do you echo that, Isaac? Because there's some coaches that you just love. Like, I love Coach D because, yeah, Coach D is very, very serious. He's like, all right, he's down to business, but at the same time, he jokes with the media, and he's a very witty guy. He's laid back at the same time. I don't think I've ever seen Nick Saban laid back.
Yeah, Nick Saban, he reminds me of a fire hydrant on the sidelines because he's always red and he's about to blow.
Right,
that's Nick Saban for you.
That's him, man. But in a way, I mean, at the end of the day, that also can speak volumes to his greatness as well.
Oh.
Because always bring up guys who are just uber competitive, never like to lose, who always take themselves very, very serious and at times too serious in the world of sports. I mean, a lot of them are proven winners. You know what I mean? A lot of them have that mantra where it's like, you know, when you talk to them, they're like the Wicked Witch of the West. You know what I mean? And Nick Saban has that persona, but at the same time, it's a catch-22 because that also may bode to why he is such an outstanding football coach. Am I right?
Yeah, without doubt. Because Nick Saban, when you look at his record as Alabama football coach, out in his first year, he turned a 7-5 program or 7-6 program into a 12-2 program. That's
right.
A one-year change. He went on the next year to win the national championship after that and has since gone on to win it 3 times with Bama. 3 times.
Yeah.
So that's outstanding. He also won one with LSU, and we are forever grateful for that as LSU fans down in the Bayou. But no, Nick Saban, he's one incredible coach, but like you said, he kind of presents himself with an aura that's a little bit off-putting at times because he's so competitive. He's so intense, and it can alienate some people, but at the same time, that's why he's great. All he wants to do is win.
Yeah, I don't know if I was a beat writer or just a reporter in general in the Alabama area, I don't know if I would love talking to Nick Saban and interviewing that man. I don't know. I would have to really, you know, say a few Hail Marys before I went in that room and interview him, right?
But, would you rather him or Pop? Coach Pop?
I like Pop.
I like Pop,
and,
too.
And speaking of Greg Popovich, just head coach of San Antonio Spurs, did you see the interview that he did with an NBA TV reporter? And I really thought he was serious, man. I was about to just become – I'm a huge Pop fan, but I was about to just, you know, swear off Greg Popovich from here on out. But because it looked as though he was just giving this reporter crap for no reason. And then at the end of the interview, he says, I'm just joking, dude. Let's redo that. And he just cracks a smile. So that's why I love Pop, man. Pop doesn't take himself too serious for the most part, right? All right. And speaking of media relations, you know, keeping on with this whole thing with athletes and coaches talking to the media and sometimes, you know, getting annoyed with us and what we do. Jim Caldwell said Tuesday that he is instructing his players not to talk with the media about the bat at ball controversy that happened at the end of Monday night's loss to Seattle because he wants his team to remain focused on Sunday's game against Arizona. No surprise there. If I was the head coach of the Detroit Lions and something like that does go down, I would be telling my players the same thing because, hey, no sense in crying over spilt milk, right? It's in the past. We got to move on. We're 0-4. Let's keep this train moving. At the same time, though, you know, Isaac, we wanted to close out yesterday's show with Top 5 Tuesday, like we do each and every Tuesday where we – you know, have an interesting top five topic for you all. And yesterday's was going to be centered on, in homage of the Lions losing on Monday Night Football in the way that they did, and the Lions always coming up with new and different ways on how to lose a game. And, you know, with that blown call, you know, the referees not understanding the rule, not understanding that since the ball was batted in the end zone, it should have been placed on the one-yard line with a refresh of downs, and Detroit possibly could have went on to score there. With that blown call, we decided to look at the top blown calls in all of sports. In all of sports. And we were going to have a lot of fun with it. So I told myself yesterday after the show that we were going to start today's show with that. Very briefly here, I'm very curious to see what your list is because there's so many blown calls. Referees aren't perfect. Officials aren't perfect. So let's have some fun with it. At number five, who you got, Isaac?
All right, Al. At number five, you know, I debated a lot for this list because there are so many bad calls. I'm sure you and I both referenced a few articles for this and found just, I mean, refs in general have a tough job. But anyway, so my number five list is the heads instead of tails job by when the Steelers, the Pittsburgh Steelers, were playing the Lions. Lions actually got on the right side of this for once when Jerome Bettis called, you know, tails, and the ref thought he called heads and was influenced by the Lions player. So that's my number five. Not really a call, but definitely a serious misinterpretation.
Gotcha. All right, I like that one. I like that. All right, I'm going to go with number five for me, Jim Joyce. And they did a documentary on Jim Joyce's life after that whole moment in which he just totally, you know, he just messed up. You know, Galarraga's perfect game. When Galarraga was the pitcher, Armando Galarraga, when he was a pitcher for the Detroit Tigers. Jim Joyce ruined a perfect game on June 2nd of 2010 from then Tigers pitcher Armando Galarraga. And after looking at the play at first base again, he saw what he had just done and just lost it. He was visibly shaken. He apologized to Galarraga. Here's the call. Oh, we don't have it. Oh, I thought we had the call. But yeah, that was just a controversial moment. So I had to put that. I actually have six. Oh, we do have it now. I just give me a thumb up. All right, here's the call of that.
Ground ball, right side. Cabrera will cut it off. Galarraga covers. He's out. No, he's safe. He is safe.
Yeah, that was pretty bad, folks. Pretty, pretty bad. And again, there's been documentaries done profiling how Jim Joyce had death threats, you know, letters sent to the organization, and how whenever he'd be walking down the street, he would, you know, people would be, you know, be cursing at him left and right. It was pretty bad. So I had to throw that one on my list. Just very unfortunate, though, because anytime you spoil a moment such as a perfect game, backlash is going to come. Ref makes mistakes. You know, referees make mistakes. Officials make mistakes. But hey, the level of which that those mistakes happen vary tremendously.
And the Tigers did such a gracious job after that game of kind of consoling Jim Joyce. Like you said, he was visibly emotional, visibly upset.
Yeah.
And the Tigers invited him onto the field for the next game, and he shook Galarraga's hand before the game and all of that. But quite a nice gesture. My number four, though, is the replacement refs in the NFL. Of course, the infamous Fail Mary. And I'm sure this is on your list, too, so I'll save the bite for you. But what a bad call. Come on. Oh, that was horrifying.
Yeah, that's my number – I can say my number five now because I'm doing actually six of them. But, yeah, let's play that right now. I mean, the Fail Mary.
Rice is 6'4". Moore is 6'6". They're out to the right. Takes the lone receiver to the left. The Packers playing at the goal line as Wilson scrambles to keep it alive. The game's final play is a Wilson lob to the end zone, which is fought for by Tate with Jennings simultaneous. Who has it? Who they give it to? Touchdown!
Oh, yes, the replacement refs. And that, ironically, also occurred during a Seattle Seahawks Monday night football game. How about that, right? Again, you know, and involved a Lions player in Golden Tate as well, right? Because first off, Golden Tate obviously pushed Packers receiver Sam Shields to the ground. No call was made. Second, Packers defender M.D. Jennings clearly catches the pass for an interception and keeps it to the ground. All the while, Seahawks Tate puts his hands on the ball, just puts his hand on the ball, and dupes a replacement referee into thinking that a reception had been made. The call set off a firestorm and on social media, including my own social media page. I remember I was up literally for about an hour and a half, Isaac, arguing with fans, arguing with some of my homies on Twitter about whether or not it was a catch. And I lost a lot of sleep. You know, you better believe I had a lot of coffee that next morning. But man, was that bad or what, though, right?
Yeah, that was terrible. My number three, sticking on the football theme of bad, terrible calls. And this one's over it, in my opinion, because it was in such an important game, such a vital position in that game. Not that this one wasn't, but this was the playoffs and everything. The tuck rule. Tom Brady tucking the ball. That's one of the most mystifying calls in the history of the NFL to me. I'm not sure if I still understand the referee's reasoning. It changed the rules of football. So for me, that's got to be in the top three.
I dig that one. All right, for me, the hand of God. Yeah, you ever heard of this one? I'm pretty sure that if you know, Diego Maradona ever wanted to get a drink in England, he would be forced to drink it without the use of his hands. All right, because my goodness, I mean, this was just an unbelievable. Just unbelievable moment. The Argentine legend pulled off one of the most, egregious handballs in World Cup history back in 1986.
Maradona just walked away from Hoddle. Maradona.
It was a clear handball. Clearly, his hand touches the ball. Argentina would win 2-1, and the man upstairs is credited with a goal with a great deal of that victory. So crazy stuff. You ever seen the video of that one?
Oh yeah. I'll expand on this one a little bit later. This is me being such a soccer fan. This is a little bit higher up my list.
Is it? Is it? Okay. All right. Well, what's the next one on your list?
So for me, number two has to be the Jim Joyce call. I think just ruining a perfect game, that's baseball history right there. And it's one of those ones where, yeah, I know that baseball is a tough sport to referee and officiate, but this was black and white. This was day and night in terms of whether he was safe or out. And you think if it's a perfect game, if the other team has no chance of winning, you give the benefit of the doubt to the pitcher. So I just thought that was one of the most egregious, terrible calls with the biggest consequences in sports history. That's my number two, in fact.
Dig that one. All right, here's my next one here, Isaac. The Jeffrey Mayer affair, 1996 ALCS game one, Yankees and Orioles. I believe we have the bite of this one, too, as well. The Yankees in the ALCS for the first time since 1981 trailed the Orioles 4-3 in the bottom of the eighth when rookie Derek Jeter stepped in to face hard-throwing reliever Armando Benitez. Now, what happened was Jeter lofted a fly ball toward the short field right fence at Yankee Stadium. Orioles outfielder Tony Tarasco camped under the ball, reached up, and the ball disappeared into the stands. Jeffrey Mayer, a 12-year-old Yankees fan, reached several feet over the fence and pulled the ball into the bleachers. Umpire Rich Garcia, standing right by the play, somehow missed the obvious fan interference. Jeter's home run tied the game, which the Yankees won in extra innings.
In right field, Tarasco going back to the track, to the wall. And what happens here? He contends that a fan reaches up and touches it. But Richie Garcia says no, it's a home run.
Oh, fan interference in baseball. How many times have we seen that, Isaac?
Yeah, so I'm going to end it with the Diego Maradona hand of God. This is the clear number one for me because the World Cup is the most crazy, most riled up event in the whole world for an entire 3 or 4 weeks, let alone this coming in an important semifinal. England has not won the World Cup since the 50s. This is a classic soccer country, the place where it might have been invented. They haven't won since the 50s. This would have given them a chance had Maradona not scored that hand of God goal. And you heard the announcer saying they're appealing for offsides because they were putting their hands up, asking the ref, where is it? That's the signal for offsides. They weren't appealing for offsides. They were appealing for a handball. It's terrible. It shouldn't have counted. I love Diego Maradona, actually. Super cool dude. He's hysterical, quite the character. But no, this was the worst, most significant missed call of all time.
It was pretty bad. Well, number one, and again, we can go back and forth with this one, but number one for me has to be the 1972 Olympic basketball game. The U.S. came from behind in the 1972 final at the Summer Olympics in what should have been really a beautiful story at the end of the day, but it turned into a chaotic mess that ended with Doug Collins having to shoot a free throw with a buzzer in his ear. Yeah, folks, I kid you not. The Russian team getting three chances to inbound the ball as well as time was stopped for them to start the play, I should say. More than 40 years later, the members of the U.S. team have failed to claim the silver medal as theirs. That game was absolutely insane in the membrane. There's been documents, in countless articles done on that game as well that I encourage all fans out there to check out. So impressive list, though, my man. That was good. And it's hard to argue with either one of those. I mean, the hand of God, I mean, everyone knows about that one, right? If we missed one, folks, I'm curious. Is there one that we're forgetting? What do you think is the biggest blown call in sports history? I'm curious to get your thoughts. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Later on in the hour, we'll talk about the Astros and Yankees, the Pistons falling to the Pacers. Also, this whole DraftKings and FanDuel controversy that seems to be taking the media world by storm. But before we get to all of that, after the first break, we'll be chatting with Tom Anastas, head coach of the MSU hockey team. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870.
Yeah, I wasn't going to let you get away with this one. So I was playing it off like I didn't know it, but happy birthday. You've been such a great boss. I hope you're having a good one. So, you know, take the show back over.
Isaac, I had no idea you were going to do that, my man. Yes, 2-5 today. Thanks a lot, dude. I really appreciate that very intriguing break. I was caught off guard, man. I didn't know you were going to do that, dude. And everyone out there who have extended out, you know, happy birthday wishes to me, I really appreciate it. A quarter century. How about that? 2-5. All right, folks. Well, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. He is a man, of course, we've had on the show before, and he is revving up for the start of a new season. Exciting stuff. You can feel hockey in the air, right? Tom Anastas, head coach of the MSU hockey team, is now with us. Tom, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks a lot for joining us today, Tom. First off, Tom, I mean, what's the excitement feel like, man, at the start of another year for you?
Yeah, it's exciting. It's always an exciting time of year, and we've been in school for, you know, a little over a month now, so we've been kind of waiting until we can really turn it up and get going, and the guys had a real productive off season. Our preseason, even though it's short, has been productive as well, and now guys are real antsy and anxious to get out and compete against somebody else rather than smacking each other around. So we're excited. We've got a good returning group. I really like the chemistry. We've actually got some experience on our team this year that we haven't had. We've got a very experienced goaltender that has really played at a high level and gives us a chance to win every night. So we're excited about our team.
Yeah, and you should be, Tom. You can just feel the excitement in the air, you know, as you guys embark on another year. And I got to ask you, Tom, before we preview the upcoming season, I want to ask you about, you know, whether or not you were bummed at all that you guys couldn't have green lines instead of blue ones at Mon Ice Arena this year.
Yeah, you know what? There's a process you have to go through, and it was Mark Hollis's idea, which was really clever. And, you know, once the lines were put in, you really didn't notice them all that much. I didn't think it was, you know, radically a real big change. I didn't think in any way it compromised the game or the quality of the game. I don't think it made a mockery of the game either, and certainly I didn't think it provided an unfair recruiting advantage. So with all those things said, I think it would have been fun to be able to do. So, yes, I was disappointed in that regard that the NCAA Rules Committee decided not to allow us to do it, but you know, we went about it the right way, and we didn't get approval at this point anyway, so it's time to move on.
Yeah, it would have been very, very cool, but I tell you what, the atmosphere at Mon Ice Arena has just been completely off the chain, Tom. I mean, you know, with the new LED lights in the stadium, in the seating, and so on and so forth. You know, I mean, it's just really the start and the peak of an $18 to $20 million project that really will just generate even more fandom surrounding around your squad. I mean, how exciting is that? And can you feel a difference in the atmosphere when you're down there on the ice, Tom?
Without a doubt, it's a real important factor in the game, without any doubt. And, you know, I just look when I get to go watch football games and how important it is, especially in key situations. You see all the players waving to the fans to get them going, to make it noisy. You go to basketball games and the Izzo's sitting right on top of the court. And what an impact it makes, you know, both in the environment for the opposition, but in inspiring the home team, and really gives you home ice advantage. So in our case, in our student section has really grown to be an important factor and catalyst in re-energizing our building. Certainly, you know, the $10 million plus that has been invested in Munn over the past three seasons is making a huge difference, not just for our players, but I think for the fan experience. So, you know, now our next step is to, you know, become a national contender and really get it rocking. And, you know, my goal since coming here is to get it back where hockey's one of the toughest tickets in this town to get, like it was for about 20 years. So that's what we're working towards. And the atmosphere in the building has a lot to do with providing that kind of experience for the fan.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, Tom, you guys are certainly well on your way to accomplishing that goal of yours. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Tom Anassis, head coach of the MSU hockey team. So, all right, Tom, you guys topped Western Ontario 2-1 in an exhibition win. I outshot the Mustangs 41-18. What'd you like from your team, even though it is just exhibition play?
Well, you know what? It was a good opportunity to play because, again, even though we've been skating on a limited basis, it's all been within the team and against each other. So it was nice to play against an opponent. You use those games because regardless of how hard you try to practice and increase the tempo, every time you play, the tempo is just that much higher. And so that allowed us to try to work on having better game-type timing and obviously evaluate a number of things. And the other thing, you know, our team is a team that has had a lot of success defensively, and from my perspective, we need to emerge offensively, and I think we have some potential to do that. And we faced a team that was pretty stingy defensively and a goalie who, believe it or not, had 4 years of pro hockey experience. So we played against a great goalie. We had a ton of chances. Didn't score as much as I would have liked, but a lot of good things came away, or we took away from that exhibition game last week.
Tom, 17-16-2 last year, 11-7-2-2 in the Big Ten. What kind of taste did last season leave in your mouth?
Well, I think it was a season that we went into looking to kind of turn the corner. And what I mean by that is, you know, kind of find ourselves, find our game, and find some winning ways and gather some confidence. I thought from that perspective, it was all positive. We put ourselves right in the Big Ten championship race to the very last game. We came home to play a home-and-home series with Michigan with a chance to win the Big Ten. Unfortunately, we lost the home game we played with them, and then we went on the road in a tough environment, and we beat them at Michigan to give us a chance. Well, unfortunately, Minnesota swept Penn State that weekend, which inched us out by a point. So we lost by a point, but it was a huge gain. We lost in the Big Ten tournament, which left a very sour taste in our mouth. I think that inspired our group and really focused our group on, hey, we've come a long way, but we got to take another big step to get to where we want to be. So our summer training is huge, and guys made a great commitment to that, have tested in the school at a level that I haven't seen since I've been here on a team-wide basis. So we're in a good place to start. Now it's all about coming together, building off that confidence from last season, and go out and make things happen.
Now, you mentioned those off-season workouts, Tom. I mean, is there anything different that you did this year in order to prepare this squad and make sure they were ready and at full force on the brink of another season?
Oh, we tweaked some of the things that we did. But generally speaking, I'm going to give the players credit because, you know, it's really on them. We're not able to coordinate their workouts. We can provide them guidance and we can provide them things to do, but it's really all about them taking the initiative to go push themselves to a higher level, and I think they did that. So, you know, some guys went home and trained. Some guys stayed here and trained together and trained with our strength coach. but I think collectively there was just a laser sharp focus by our group as a whole to say, hey, we got to get better. We can't waste this time. When we come back to school, we got to set a new standard for our group as to where we are. So that's, you know, our launching pad into the season, and that's what they did.
And for you, Tom, I mean, what's your off-season schedule like? I mean, are you constantly on the recruiting trail and traveling everywhere?
Well, it's a combination of a few things. There's off-season recruiting for sure. There's our sports camps that we have on campus for several weeks. There's a lot of functions that I end up attending for various reasons, representing our program or whatever, some speaking opportunities as well. And then, you know, you try to squeeze a little bit of re-energizing time in there. I haven't done a good job the first few years I was here with that. And I try to do a little bit better job this year. Probably not great, but at least a little bit better. Because when the season hits, you're going real hard, and it's you know, you're kind of sprinting a marathon. And you know, we're in the midst of it now.
Did you feel yourself getting burned out at all last season, Tom?
No, I didn't. I haven't felt burnout, but certainly I've got to be aware that I am getting older. And so, you know, you'd like to see your resilience always be maintained, like when you're in your 20s. But, you know, I'm learning that it's not. So got to be smart, you know, getting enough sleep, getting enough, you know, the right things to eat and taking good care of yourself, getting some exercise. So, you know, you can be ready to go as well. So it's, you know, I love what I do. I'm fortunate to be able to do what I do. But I do, everybody tells you how important it is to take care of yourself so you can be effective in your role.
It definitely is very important, Tom. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKR's Current Sports, Tom Anastas, head coach of the MSU hockey team. Tom, for your squad, how concerning is health? I know you guys had a season-ending, a knee injury for freshman defenseman Jarrett Rosberg. That leaves you guys with, what, 7 healthy defensemen? How concerning is health for you guys?
Well, that is a concern. It is something that is always kind of tenuous when you lose somebody for, especially in this case, a season. So we came into the year and we lost a player on defense in the off season. We were not anticipating Jarrett being out, and so it has made us a little thinner than we'd like to be back there. But you know, that's part of the game. You have to overcome it. We were expecting Jarrett to come in and play meaningful minutes and make an impact on our team. And so he has had the surgery, and now he's on his road to recovery, but he will definitely miss the season, and we'll just have to make the best of what we have.
Yeah, that's all you can do. And also, I would be remiss if I didn't bring up, of course, you know, Jake Hildebrand. I mean, tied for 2nd in the nation last season with 6 shutouts. You know, he's one of your guys' best players, and I'm certain you guys will lean on him again this year. What makes Jake so special, and do you think he can even raise his game even higher this season?
I do think he could raise his game higher, and I think it all starts really this weekend because what makes him special is that his teammates love him. He's able to, you know, be a great teammate and yet inspire his teammates, push his teammates, hold his teammates accountable in many ways, as his teammates do to him as well. And then he's got a very strong work ethic. He's a fierce competitor on the ice. He challenges and plays every shot as though it's like the Stanley Cup or national championship game, and I think that makes everybody better around him. And he's got a pretty darn cool demeanor, which allows him to not sweat the small stuff. And in that position in particular, I think that's a real benefit. So those are some key characteristics. I do think he can raise his game. I really do. I thought he had a phenomenal year last year. But I thought he started slow, and I think if we can get him playing at the start of the season like he did, you know, pretty much for the latter half to two-thirds of the season last year, he'll even have a greater year than he had this year. But overall, he's a real catalyst for our team, and he's also a leader on our team, and guys look to him for leadership. So I look for him to have his best year as a senior since he's been a Spartan.
Before we get you out of here, Tom, are there any other players that you think will turn some heads unexpectedly this season?
I do. I think there will be a number of players that will probably emerge during the course of the year. You know, you look at Mackenzie McEachern, and he's had two really good years here as a freshman and sophomore, and I think, you know, his junior year could be a real breakout season for him. He had a tremendous offseason and came back in just outstanding shape, and I've really liked what I've seen early on with him. I think Ryan Keller really came into his own last year and, you know, became one of our top goal scorers, and he's a good forechecker. He plays with speed, and I'd like to see him continue where he left off at the end of last season. I think, you know, Michael Ferentino, our captain, Joe Cox, an assistant captain, Thomas Ebbing is kind of primed to take another step. And then back on defense, when you look at a guy like Travis Walsh, he's a senior now. He was a second-team All-Big Ten player last year. And I thought Johnny Drager and Red Holland really stepped up their game and will take another step in their game. So I think across the board there's going to be a lot of growth in most all of our players, and I think those are some of the guys that you might be able to look to early in the season that might make a difference.
Okay. Well, it all begins for you guys October 9th. That's right, Friday versus Maine at the Icebreaker Tournament. At 8 p.m. versus Maine. Definitely looking forward to that one. And before we get you out of here, Tom, I want to ask you this question because it's sort of the theme of today's show. Of course, you've probably seen that Detroit Lions last-minute play that everyone's talking about, the referee controversy. And we've been listing our top five biggest upsets in sports history. Is there an upset, a top five blown call, excuse me, in sports history? Is there any blown call that really stands out in your mind in sports history that you like to share?
Oh, the ones that come to mind immediately, man. I'm a lifelong Lions fan, and suffering in the playoffs last year, you know, against Dallas, and then certainly this one the other night are very notable. You know, and of course, when you play so few games, every call like that is just exacerbated to be, you know, so important. But outside of that, nothing comes to mind that to me was, you know, a game changer on the immediate front anyway.
Yeah, but I tell you what, last year's Dallas game does really stand out like a sore thumb, doesn't it?
It sure does.
All right, folks, the one, the only, Tom Anastas, head hockey coach of the MSU hockey team. Tom, thanks so much for your time and good luck this weekend.
Yeah, thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
All right, folks, this is our second break. When we come back, we will talk about the controversy centered around fantasy football and fantasy sports sites like FanDuel and DraftKings. Also, Tom Brady had some interesting comments on youth sports. Yeah, you don't want to miss that and so much more. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870.
It's your birthday. We gon' party like it's your birthday.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. You're just keeping them coming today, Isaac, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm hamming it up. I had to make some significant cuts to that song, as you can imagine, to make it appropriate.
Oh, yes, without a doubt. We don't want the FCC, to come calling us, all right? But, yeah, thank you for that, though, my man. Again, we're asking you guys to call in. We have about 10 minutes left in the show. 517-355-9527. I know we had Jody from Canada. He called around the 1:30 mark, so call back in, Jody, and we'll get you on the air to chat about anything that's on your sports noggin. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Like us there. Leave us a comment there. I'll read it live here on the air. Also, you can tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR, or at WKAR_sports, our official Twitter page for Current Sports, folks. And if you don't want to tweet back, just follow us, all right? We appreciate a follow. All right, 10 minutes left. Interesting stuff here because, you know, this is something that I have just recently partook in, and I find it very fun. It's very entertaining. And it's one of those things, though, that is debated highly whether or not it should have more regulation than it does and whether or not it should be considered sports gambling. And what I'm talking about is DraftKings and FanDuel, fantasy sites that I am positive you guys have seen ads and commercials about. They play commercials and ads you know, just about once every 2 minutes, okay, on television. It's absolutely crazy. And it allows you just to partake in a fantasy draft. You have to stay under a certain salary cap. And if that, depending on how that squad performs, you can win moolah. A lot of people do it. But these sites are under the spotlight right now because a DraftKings employee ended up finishing second in a contest and winning a lot of moolah on the rival site of DraftKings, FanDuel, due to a data leak. Interesting stuff, because now you're starting to see left and right, you know, different individuals who participate in these sites voice their opinion about this data leak, quote unquote. And, you know, there's now a lack of trust with those individuals who do partake. So, you know, I like to pose the question, you know, first off, what are your thoughts about these sites? And do you even think that they should be illegal or have some sort of governing body overlook them? Because it's so easy. Again, I partook in one, you know, like what, the past 2 weeks now. It's fun stuff. You draft your team and you just kind of wait for your team to perform and see how they perform. And then you go from there. Right. And there's many people that go back and forth. I know HBO's Real Sports, they did a very intriguing documentary on how both of these sites came about and, you know, the amount of people who do partake in them. And even, you know, one thing that stood out in that documentary to me was a few guys who don't even have jobs. They've been so successful at these sites that they don't even have a 9-to-5 or any job for that matter, because they've been racking in the dough due to their performances in various sports on these sites for years, some making over $100,000 a year doing it, and even a few millionaires here and there. Crazy stuff. Isaac, what's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, Al, I don't think that this should be legal. I don't see how this is, to be honest, that different from sports gambling. And, of course, sports gambling's illegal in, what, probably, I think, 47 of the 50 United States. And, you know, it was the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act of 1992, known as the Bradley Act, that barred betting on sports games in all states except for Nevada, Delaware, Oregon, Montana, and then had a loophole so that New Jersey eventually could get it, which they recently did. But no, I think this is not a great trend for society. I do think it impugns the integrity of certain sporting events and games. And I don't see how it's that much different, how a fantasy site is any different from the basic line on a game. I don't think this should be legal. It's something where your odds to win are very skewed. And the way they present the information on commercials, no, I'm not a big fan of this whatsoever.
Yeah, and, you know, the main argument that, again, when looking at, because this has really been the only in-depth piece done on DraftKings and FanDuel, and that is coming from, you know, HBO's Real Sports. And the main reason why they believe it won't hold up in the court of law when it comes to being considered illegal gambling is because of the, I guess you can say, the lack of knowing what the outcome is going to be of a sporting, you know, fantasy, you know, lineup. Because it's really hard to predict whether or not, you know, Matthew Stafford is going to throw 3 touchdowns on a given Sunday. You can guess, you know, you can guess and put him in your lineup, but the unpredictability of it is what makes it, you know, what has allowed it to become what it is now. You know what I mean? Now, that argument only goes so far, because you can say that, you know, you can say the same thing when talking about betting on a game. You know what I mean? You don't know. Sports are unpredictable. So, I don't know, it's very interesting. I'll tell you what, it's pretty fun. I tell you what.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue against
that.
Oh,
my goodness. And it's very, very addicting, man. And, you know, it's so interesting, because you got, when I went on there, there's leagues in which you can just put in, like $3 and just weigh it out, and the possibilities are immense. If you draft the right lineup, you can win like $100,000 and you only put in $3. And then you have, I was just browsing the other day, and there's other leagues in which you can put in for like over $1,000. I mean, those are like big time guys betting, just throwing around thousands and thousands of dollars. Anytime, and I've always said this, anytime that you are dealing with an immense large of money being put in a situation that has an unpredictable outcome and people are again, winning big off of it, hey, I mean, my goodness, You're telling me that you don't think the federal government is going to take a look at it and say, okay, we need to really, really look at what's going on here. So it's no surprise that this is happening now, especially in this situation, because now you have an employee of one of these sites involved with winning a ton of money from a rival site due to a data leak that he found within the system. That's shystiness. When you have shystiness within any sort of quote-unquote gambling forum, you better believe hell will be raised. And that's exactly what's going to happen with this, I think.
Yeah, and it should be, because this isn't just a fantasy sports website. This is an ESPN streak for cash where if you do well, you get money. This is, if you put in money, there's a chance you get money back. And I say a chance because, like you said, so unpredictable. So unpredictable, especially when analyzing the specific performances of individual players. So when there's a data leak, when somebody has information that other people don't have going into this, that's called insider trading on the stock market. Mm-hmm. That's insider information here. And this isn't that much different. No, this should... I mean, that employee should definitely kind of feel a little bit of the force of the law. I'm not sure if it was banned by the company what he did, if there were certain restrictions like, hey, if there's a data leak, you cannot use that information. You cannot bet on it.
But, and that's the thing.
Because there should be stipulations.
Right.
There should be.
Oh, there definitely should be. And the thing that I think he's going to get away with in that argument is because there's no one regulating this at
exactly.
all. There's
negligence.
No regulation. So, hey, if he gets some insider information about a data leak, how can you lay the hammer on them legally? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I don't think you can, because there is no federal regulation when it concerns that. Now, without that being said, taking it out the equation, is this any different, though, from playing the lottery?
No. Well, yes and no. But fantasy sports in general, no, you're really spinning the wheel in some ways and just throwing the ball on the
Now, that's legal.
Spot.
I mean, the lottery is legal, though. So.
Yes, it is. But the lottery is a little bit different than sports gambling. I think this resembles sports gambling more so than the lottery. Would you not agree?
Well, when you look at both and you compare both, I mean, there is, first off, unpredictability. Yes, that's the big argument in this whole conversation. And second, I think that when you look at the lottery and compare it to a fantasy lineup in which you can win big bucks, I honestly, when sitting back thinking about it, I don't see much difference in it. I don't know. I'm gonna have to let that, you know, sit on my mind for a little bit there, man. I just thought of that on the fly just now, and now I'm stuck in a rut thinking about whether or not, you know, how it compares to the lottery realm, and whether or not that should be any different. So I don't know. We're definitely gonna continue this conversation, man. But it's a very intriguing one. I also got to shout out the Detroit Pistons. You know, you guys know I'm a big Pistons fan. I really, really liked what's Stanley Johnson did last night. He looked good. It's just an exhibition, though. It's only a preseason game. Stanley Johnson, 26 points. He's a scoring juggernaut. How about Paul George? I was glad to see him just playing
in the first quarter.
Yeah, he was unbelievable, right? He was absolutely unbelievable. Finished the first half with 11 points. I'm talking about Stanley Johnson here. But with Spencer Dinwiddie struggling in ineffective play and foul trouble, Johnson got the start in the second half. He scored 15 points in the second half, and he was forced to even guard red-hot Pacer standout Paul George, who finished with 32-20, as you said, Isaac, coming in the first quarter. All right, folks, so we are out of time. Big thanks to Tom Onassis, head coach of the hockey team, MSU hockey team, for joining us on the show today. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.